Many tens of thousands have demonstrated for Palestine around the country since October, and will keep on marching until the slaughter stops. But there's a growing sense that marching alone won't be enough to force Labour to abandon its support for Israel's genocide. We need to be organising in our workplaces and our unions, to bring workmates into the campaign and, where possible, to poke a stick into the wheel of war. Now that sounds all well and good, but how can we make that happen? One of the many pro-Palestine groups that has sprung up in the union movement is Teachers and School Staff for Palestine. Despite hostile media coverage and attempts at suppression coming from Labour state education ministers and their departments, the group has already organised a series of actions. Here to tell us about their work is Lucy Honan. Lucy is an experienced teacher and long-time member of the Australian Education Union. She is also a member of Solidarity. You're listening to The Sound of Solidarity, brought to you by Solidarity. We're a revolutionary socialist group in Australia, and if you'd like to find out more about us, our website is solidarity.net.au. I'm David Glanz, and I'm recording this episode on unceded Wurundjeri land in Narm or Melbourne. So welcome, Lucy.
Thanks, David.
So first up, just tell us about Teachers and School Staff for Palestine. Why did you and others set it up, and what are you hoping to achieve?
So Teachers and School Staff for Palestine is a group of rank and file educators. So there's a group in New South Wales and a group in Victoria. And we're rank and file members of our education unions, mainly the Australian Education Union, although there are some members of the Independent Schools Union as well, and some other miscellaneous members from universities and so on, who are kind of education or schools adjacent. We set it up just in November last year, I suppose, when really the movement for Palestine started growing and becoming more widespread, and the rallies on Sundays were becoming really consistent. In both Victoria and New South Wales, there's a tradition of rank and file teacher groups. We had a Teachers for Refugees group here and in New South Wales, which was really effective and an important little group of teachers who took action as union members against refugee racism and policies of abuse of refugees. And we, you know, people who had experience in those groups and other just kind of general rank and file organising around pay and conditions and our agreements and so on, we have a pre-existing network of activists and left-wing people who, you know, it made sense that all eyes were on Palestine. Everyone was talking about it and everyone was thinking about, you know, well, what can we do to take action effectively about this? So we put together a little call out for Teachers for Palestine. And at the same time, there was the open letter launched, Trade Unions for Palestine open letter launched, and lots of AEU and IEU members signed on to that. And we reached out to those people after a forum to kind of combine our efforts. And, you know, we all merged into one group, Teachers and School Staff for Palestine. And in a lot of ways, the rest is history. We became a very active WhatsApp group, and that turned into school-based actions and meetings and online action.
So how have education ministers and principals reacted? I mentioned there was some hostility. And how have you responded to their argument that it's not appropriate to discuss Gaza in the classroom?
So last year, we called a school-based action. So we called on teachers and school staff to wear their kefirs, take a selfie at school, hold up posters in solidarity with Palestine. And immediately on sending out this information, we got a massive kickback from the media and from, in Victoria, Ben Carroll, our education minister, who said not just that it's inappropriate, he said that it's inflammatory and divisive, and called on us not to do it. And, you know, further on, there were Liberal Party calls for us to be sacked. And at a school level that was kind of interpreted very directly when members of Teachers and School Staff for Palestine were handing out information about the action, about a vigil after school based on teachers getting together and protesting the loss of children's lives. Those, you know, teachers were disciplined. They were sent home immediately. They were told to take off their kefirs. And the department deputy secretary sent out very strong warnings to principals about, you know, schools needing to be neutral, teachers needing to be impartial, and, you know, thinly veiled warnings that people who participate in the action would face disciplinary action. We responded to that pretty angrily. I think that just inflamed teachers even more. So people just kind of really, this is including people who have never really participated in their union or in rank and file activism at all, to hear the department and the Minister for Education tell teachers that in the face of what was clearly by then a genocide, we understood it to be a genocide even though this was before the ICJ case decisions, we were outraged because everything that we teach about in the curriculum is about standing up to bullying. It's about we're supposed to teach kids to stand up to racism. There's a huge element in the code of conduct that's about taking a lead on human rights. And it's for people who are kind of fresh to politics, I suppose, there was this just bizarre incongruence between all of those things that we were supposed to be doing about things in general and then what we are told to be absolutely silent about in terms of Palestine. But I suppose for people who had been following and those of us who had started following Palestine politics more assiduously, it became clear just how political this issue already was because, as it turns out, Ben Carroll, our education minister, had been the author of the Memorandum of Understanding with the Israeli Ministry of Defence earlier in the year, agreeing to special deals and, you know, kind of secret deals, actually, to do with weapons trade and other kinds of trade with Israel. So, you know, the fact that our state government, let alone our federal government, which obviously has open and clear ties with Israel, but that our state government is so deeply tied to Israel, I think made it clear to a lot of people that the silencing was really horrific politics, you know, horrific kind of Australian imperialist politics, I suppose, playing out in our working lives. So people got organised in the face of that repression in our sub-branches, and it became immediately clear to anyone who wasn't clear why we were organising as unionists. It became very clear why we needed to be unionists at that point when that repression started coming in. And some more experienced members in the group kind of were giving advice to other members in the group to say, to talk about how to manage the workplace level repression. Things like calling a sub-branch meeting and communicating with all the other members at school via the sub-branch email lists and union channels, communicating with other people very obviously as a union member, so saying to people, I'm talking to you about this as a union member, to make it clear that you're not speaking on the behalf of the department, which is one of the things that they kind of said we weren't allowed to do, and we were like, that's fine. It's obviously we're not talking in the department on behalf of the department about this. But it also, you know, in doing that, that also made it clear that we did need to win the union in as many different layers as possible to a pro-Palestine position. And so that meant it was important to be able to win motions at a sub-branch level to say, well, the majority of union members at this workplace does support Palestine, so we can speak on behalf of the union in that way. And then the regions, which are clusters of schools in a geographical area, also started passing motions about that. And, you know, we are yet to win a more overt and strong position at the state level, but that's definitely a goal that we need to do that. So that was very effective because as a result of all of that workplace union organising, at one school, a principal retracted their attempt to warn a teacher against discussing genocide with other teachers. At another school, a person who had been sent home was immediately reinstated and the entire region passed a motion of solidarity with her. At another school, the teachers there who were wearing keffiyehs to work, who were told they weren't allowed to, just simply defied the principal and said, no, we're going to do it anyway. And as a result, the principal attempted to escalate that to the department itself. And through that case, where the teachers actually simply defied the principal, it became clear to all of us that actually the department wasn't going to act about this. So it was kind of a good test case for us all that at that particular school, there was no disciplinary action for any of those teachers and they couldn't do anything. So at that school, even more teachers started wearing their keffiyehs and they held a watermelon morning tea outside with students to, you know, increase visibility around the issue. They gave support to some of the students who had been reprimanded for wearing the keffiyeh and made formal complaints about that. And the fact that that had been won, and all those different instances had been won, meant that plenty of other people then felt like, well, okay, you know, if they were that defiant and that flagrant and haven't been disciplined whatsoever, then we're going to do it too.
That's really inspiring. There is, of course, one teacher, fairly high-profile case, where the issue is yet to be resolved. Jason Wong, who has been working from home now for some time as a result of disciplinary measures by the department. Can you talk us through that case, why it's different, but also the kind of support that Jason's been getting?
As part of our campaign, we gathered signatories to an open letter calling on Ben Carroll to break ties with Israel and for the Department of Education to shift its position to support teachers to teach for Palestine. And we held a speak out outside the Department of Education and teachers, lots of different teachers spoke at that. And it was a really awesome event because you heard firsthand exactly what teachers were doing in defiance of the department at that time and in defiance of Ben Carroll. And Jason was one of the teachers who spoke out that day. And he was a really actually inspiring speaker. I think he was the most celebrated speaker on the day. He talked about being a science teacher and, you know, calling a spade and, you know, if it's genocide, it's genocide. I'm not going to dance around it. He talked about the fact that in his classroom, everyone was welcome no matter where they were from. And he, you know, made a point of saying that Jewish and Israeli students are in his classroom and they are all welcome and all blameless in the current catastrophe that's facing Gaza. And Jason also contextualized the violence of Hamas. So he spoke about the fact that there is a history to October 7 and that, well, the violence of oppressed people is not the same as the violence of the oppressors. Of course, this is just so taboo in Australia to talk about and to try and discuss the difference between the violence of Hamas and the violence of the Israeli state. And immediately, you know, Channel 7 chopped a little piece of that, of his speech, and the Herald Sun then took it up, and then Zionist took it up, and the department was very, very happy, I think, to find somebody that they could accuse of supporting terrorism. And shamefully, of the department, they have kept an investigation going against Jason for that since essentially that week after he made that speech. And in response to that, we organised an open letter asking for unionists around the country to sign it in support with him and received a very extremely good response. Hundreds of people have signed it. And I think, you know, beyond teaching, so many people have experienced workplace repression around Palestine that it kind of hits a nerve. But for teachers, you know, we took this to our regional meetings. So these are the meetings which are clusters of schools and also sub-branch meetings. And we took a motion in solidarity with Jason and calling on our union leadership to be more open and more public about its support for Jason, because they have been supporting him in the meetings and the, you know, the discussions and investigation with the department, but they haven't publicly said anything. And Jason has been facing a very public skewering. So we called on them to offer that support. And for so many teachers in those regional meetings, that has been such a key issue. And some of the comments that people have made in speaking to that motion have just been about, you know, the fact that he made that speech on a weekend, you know, in his own time about something, you know, that is absolutely clear to most people, but that the department can claim to control our speech on weekends, you know, and about anything that they think is politically inexpedient or don't want talked about, really hits a nerve with teachers, because it kind of feels like, well, when are we allowed to be human beings, you know, fighting for liberation? If you're not letting us do it at school and you're not letting us do it on a weekend, when are we allowed to do it? So that has been a very galvanizing sort of call to action. And again, once again, you know, we're really disappointed that the union officials haven't responded positively about that yet, but that doesn't mean the support amongst members isn't there for him. It's very widely and strongly felt.
No, that's very heartening. However, I'm assuming in sub-branch meetings and regional meetings, there is some pushback on the general question from time to time. Have you found a pattern in amongst people who don't want to support for pro-Palestine motions? And how have you and other teachers responded?
I think it's shifted over time, actually. When we first started talking about it last year, the response was a lot more defensive, and even though people had instincts about wanting to support Palestine themselves personally, they were worried. I think they really, the kind of prevailing mainstream sense that you have to criticize both Hamas and Israel together in the same sentence is the only way not to be anti-Semitic. I think that really constrained a lot of the discussions, although frankly I don't think there was many places where pro-Palestine motions went down where there were people from teachers and school staff for Palestine putting them forward and making the arguments. It didn't take much to knock over those arguments. This year, things have shifted so much, and partly that is just the extent to which Israel has gone, I think, for all the world to see. It is a genocide and a horrific one at that, and it is impossible to defend. So, you know, that I think has shifted things. We've been, alongside the motion in solidarity with Jason, we've been calling for members to participate in a union ban against school STEM programs that are sponsored by weapons manufacturing companies. And that motion, again, is very, very popular, and people are very, very keen to support it, to show, you know, in a practical way their solidarity with Palestine and their opposition to militarism. But some arguments that come up with that one are actually just, they're slightly different. Again, still you get a kind of nervousness about naming Israel as potentially being anti-Semitic in itself. To name Israel as an aggressor is anti-Semitic. Another argument that comes up, interestingly, is about the Ukraine. So, you know, people will say, well, isn't it important that we are developing support for these weapons manufacturing companies because we need to send this stuff to the Ukraine? That's a fight for self-determination that we should be supporting. And just because it's going badly in Palestine doesn't mean that it's not going to be used in self-defense in other places. And I think that's a challenge that teachers and school staff of Palestine, and frankly the general, the left and the working class, will need to grapple with, because while it's very, very plain to see at the moment that there is no element of self-defense in what Israel's doing, and these weapons are being used openly for genocidal reasons, they're also being used to extend and really, you know, make an absolute bloodbath of the Ukraine. And there isn't anything useful in sending these weapons to be used in Ukraine either. But that message or that argument is less confidently being made. I think those politics around demilitarization and anti-war in general are, I think, still being developed, and they're something on the agenda for all of us to work on.
You mentioned that the AEU has, at the official level, been slow and or reluctant to join in the campaign for Palestine. I think a lot of people have been shocked by how widespread that phenomenon is amongst union officials in general. There are some honourable exceptions, like Christy Kane, one of the leaders of the CFMEU. But overall, the experience of most union activists is they've found it hard going to get their union officials to support. My union, for instance, is still refusing, 6 months on, to allow us to take union flags to pro-Palestine protests. And that's an argument we've yet to win. Why do you think the officials have been so reluctant to commit? Many of them who are quite willing to get stuck in on quite controversial questions around racism or sexism or transphobia.
Yeah, we've discussed this a lot in Teachers and School Staff of Palestine. I think part of it is just an underdeveloped politics around imperialism in Palestine. I think this kind of came out of the blue for many union officials, that they would be asked to ever take a position on Palestine. And so they perhaps didn't respond with any kind of instinctive pro-Palestine position. But I don't think that's necessarily the excuse in the AEU. So just before October 7, the AEU sent a delegation of unionists, well, part of a delegation of unionists to Palestine and met up with a Palestine trade union group there, handed over the AEU flag. There's a really nice selfie of that having happened. And it was in the AEU magazine the month that we were taking this action. That was the kind of lead article. So that's not the excuse in the AEU. I think what has happened in the AEU is that the union officials, through, all of the different dynamics that have corroded unionism, over the last couple of decades, have become very, very reluctant to take a position against the employer, in our case, the department, the state government. They're very, very reluctant to take an adversarial position about anything because their only strategy in negotiating on wages and conditions, which is what they see as core business for unionism, is to have negotiations and to throw other political things into the mix, which is going to add to the demands that they're making on the state government, I think just makes them balk because they actually don't even have enough levers to win improvements on wages and conditions without union members being able to take industrial action with only the strategy of sitting around and negotiating at the table and offering our services during election campaigns. Union members in Victoria are furious, in general with our union leadership over our last EBA campaign where we won a pay loss. So the idea of opening up another front where, they see that as creating demands that they're never going to be able to achieve because there is nothing that they can offer to change around the negotiating table around that, I think that they just don't want to do it. So what they've done instead is to pass the buck over to AEU Federal. So the AEU Federal has made more sort of open statements calling for ceasefire and calling for an end to Israeli aggression. But they've done it in the strangest possible way. So, again, just back to the issue of the Ukraine, the AEU Federal Conference had as guest speakers a Palestinian trade unionist and a Ukrainian trade unionist, both on the platform. And the Ukrainian trade unionist is from a union that has been calling on its part, the international education unions, to push and press for our governments to increase military aid to the Ukraine. And then they kind of got these two delegates, the Palestinian and the Ukrainian delegates, to Canberra to, as a pair, essentially lobby for their particular agendas, with Canberra politicians. But the two issues, those two kind of sets of politics don't line up. On the one hand, with the Palestine, we're calling for an end to the militarization, an end to the weapons contracts, an end to the bombardment. And the Ukrainian trade unionists are calling for an increase. So, the AEU has put these two issues together in a really problematic and self-defeating way, I think. Back to your original question about why this has happened, I think it is a really dire strategy on the part of union officials to step away from taking industrial action or emboldening members to take any action themselves and seeing the limits of what unions can do as what can happen at the negotiating table, and just kind of thinking, well, there's nothing we can do there about Palestine, so let's not even talk about it.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you have been involved in Teachers for Refugees, which was a hugely successful group because it organised unprotected industrial action some years ago as part of the campaign to get kids and their parents off the South Pacific island of Nauru. Very proud moment in union history. How important has it been that you established those networks back then for Teachers for Refugees, for getting teachers and school staff for Palestine off the ground? Is there a heavy overlap? Did the lessons you learned and the networks you build around Teachers for Refugees stand you in good stead? In other words, I'm assuming it's always worth organising, because whatever you succeed or don't succeed in today, you're laying the basis for future campaigns. Is that over-optimistic?
I think the lessons of that campaign were really important, and I think it elevated horizons for lots of people, lots of teachers and lots of people in the left, to see what was possible with rank and file organising, because we literally organised a walkout from work during a work day calling for kids to come off Nauru. And yes, the networks and the tradition, I suppose, of doing that kind of work at a totally rank and file level. So that was all organised by just teachers who got in touch with their sub-branches and their region, organised so that, you know, people would walk out that day. That was a huge lesson and a huge feat. And some of those are kind of like, you think of them as neural pathways, like the fact that they kind of happened enlivened connections and so on. But actually, it's a whole different group of people who have been involved in Teachers and School Staff for Palestine in Victoria. And that in itself, I guess, is a lesson that you don't have to be the same personnel. You know, you can hear of the traditions, or you can know that that thing happened without having done it yourself, or be in a context where people, you know, you don't even know about it, but other people know about it and they have the confidence to pull something off, you know, that has the same dynamics in it, but are slightly different. So yes, it's similar, but it's also one kind of fascinating element of organizing Teachers and School Staff for Palestine is that people who have never organized before as unionists can also be incredibly brazen and incredibly confident, because sometimes not knowing how limited your own union officials are and how intransigently awful your own employers can be emboldening, because you just, you know, you think, well, why shouldn't I be allowed to do this, and why wouldn't my union back me when I did this? And that gets you a long way, and it did get us a long way, I think. And I think, you know, then the important thing though in following up that sort of brazenness is the organizing to then come in behind it, which I think, you know, we did really well. And people who were experienced and knew what had to happen as soon as someone was sent home, or as soon as, you know, there was a very repressive instruction down from a principal, the people who gave advice were people who had done Teachers for Refugees and other rank and file organising. So the lesson is, yes, it really pays to organise, and the echoes of the strength of and the lessons of that organising pop up even if people haven't been directly involved in it.
In my introduction, I sort of asserted with absolutely no evidence the importance of organising in our workplaces and in our unions in order to build and strengthen the campaign for Palestine. Would you like to talk a bit about why that's so important?
So two reasons. One is that while at the moment it feels like, for some people, it feels like everybody that you know cares about Palestine, and you can surround yourself with WhatsApp and Instagram and rallies on Sundays where, you know, everybody that you know cares about Palestine, or you know what they think about Palestine anyway, and they're willing to do anything to stop the genocide. But then, you know, you go to work and there can sometimes be a huge silence that just sits around it, or it's skirted around as a topic. And it isn't necessarily the case that the entire working class is conscious of the genocide, or does feel empowered to do anything about it or understand the issue at all. And so workplace organizing is a very important way of reaching out beyond the already organized ranks and communicating with those people about how important it is to take a stand and showing how to do that. You know, and that's sometimes why, more than anything, you know, even before the workplace repression from the bosses, it can be quite challenging to call on people that you work with to take a position or share a position with you. And that in itself is powerful to do that collectively and to draw people in to movement. On top of that, the really powerful thing about workplace organizing, even if they're little things like tomorrow is International Day for the of Elimination of Racial Discrimination, and you know, we're doing watermelon morning teas and the kefirs again. The powerful thing about that is that you lay the basis and you lay those kind of pathways and connections for taking more and more significant steps to, as you put it in the introduction, you know, put a stick in the wheels of the Australian government, the Victorian government's support for the Israeli genocide. For teachers, you know, our work, what we do as teachers is very important to the ruling class. We provide an ideological education and orientation for young people who are going to become workers in capitalism. And if, you know, those young people and generally in society, if people see teachers saying, this is not okay, we resist this and we will not participate in the ideological support for this genocide, then it breaks a key spoke and a key element of support that the government relies on for what they're doing. And, you know, many, many workers are the same. This is the same thing that, you know, ABC workers. It's why the ABC couldn't tolerate Latouf taking the position that she did, and other media workers. They can't accept that because they rely so heavily on us as workers providing ideological support for their agenda. You know, it's not just ideological, you know, the work of growing up young people into people who create weaponry or operate weaponry. That's why we are refusing to do it and saying, you know, we're not going to teach STEM programs that are about warfare. And, you know, we support the university workers who are doing the same and so on. But just even for those people whose, you know, it seems like a tenuous connection, you know, maybe there isn't anything that, you know, immediately connects your work to the work that the government is trying to conduct in its relationships with Israel. There is a very, very proud history of unionists standing up and just saying no to Australian imperialism at very important points in time, like the moratorium, the anti-war moratorium, the anti-apartheid movement, people coming together and stopping work, ultimately saying we won't continue to do our work in this system and we won't let you continue to run it until this war is stopped, or, you know, until ties are broken with, you know, apartheid and so on. So everybody has a role to play there, and our power as workers is so, you know, it's our secret weapon that we need to get better at using. And so even those small actions, like the workplace actions, build the muscle so that we can exercise it in a really big way to affect significant change.
All right, well, I'm inspired. Hopefully people listening are inspired. If people who are listening have never done anything at work, what's your advice for step one? If they go into work, what should they say or do just to get things moving? Obviously, it takes time to get to the kind of level of organisation that teachers and school staff for Palestine have, and that's been built up, as you say, over years of experience. So if you're starting from nothing, what's the first step?
First step is to join your union and communicate with other people at work as a union member. I think that's really important because you immediately are distinguishing yourself as not communicating with people just in a, you know, in a social way, and you're not communicating on behalf of the business or the workplace or the boss. You're communicating in a completely different way, and that's as a unionist with a different set of interests, a set of interests that can be defined by the workers at that workplace. So join your union and find the other union members there. And one other thing I would say that has been useful for teachers and school staff for Palestine is actually potentially not to start at your workplace. Maybe start trying to find other people who are in the same industry as you or the same union as you, but not at the same workplace, and share ideas with them about what it is that's particular about your industry, that, you know, there are little spaces or opportunities that you can challenge the silence, but do it in a way that is going to let you do it potentially multiple times, or to build an audience rather than immediately get you into some trouble that the boss might use it to set an example with other people. So there's a bit of an art to it, and there's a bit of trial and error as well. But talking to other people and finding other people to collaborate with is really the starting point. So that's why join your union and find some other people who you can talk to about what you could do.
All right. Many thanks, Lucy. Really appreciate your time. And hopefully people are inspired, not just teachers, but people in other workplaces, other sectors, to get organised, because I think you and your comrades are setting a great example.
Thanks, David. Yep, it's been some of the most inspiring stuff that I've been involved in for a long time. So, yep, right. I encourage anyone to get involved in their rank and file groups and get organising.
All right. Keep it up, and free Palestine.